survivors of violence. Those type of populations need to be addressed on a citywide basis. So yes, this action you take today and you consider, I think, has at its root an equity social justice foundation. I lend my support to the Welcome Home Coalition, who you may have heard about. It's now exceeding 100 organizations that who want to work in coalition with you to identify a permanent source of funding for housing. It's going to be a challenge, and I can't help but feel with the words I've heard today, the reconnection. We look to innovation. I think there needs to be a not business as usual approach. I think all sectors need to be involved, and I think we need to hear more and involve private sector. So I intend to work with Dane to kind of address those kind of issues and concerns. So I think it's all sectors. The foundation, whether it be Meyer or others, need to be involved as well. With that, I'll just close. And again, it's a blessing to be with you. I appreciate the time.
Thanks,
Rick. And finally, Martha McLennan, the Executive Director of Northwest Housing Alternatives.
Thank you. Good afternoon. You know, as I was looking at the opportunity to testify to you today, I reflected back in my life and my career, and I've now worked more than 30 years in affordable housing and community development in Portland. And it is clear to me that we are in an unprecedented time. We have been challenged with homelessness and affordable housing off and on over those years to greater or lesser degrees, but what we're seeing in this past year or two is really quite stunning. So I also want to applaud the council for the leadership that it is taking to look at this problem in a very comprehensive way and to look at, in all corners, for the resources that can help contribute to solutions. If we don't solve this, we do risk the health of the overall community. We risk, while we have a very hot market now, what we risk is a collapse of a market if we don't address this problem. What I want to talk about briefly is the idea of linkage fees. Kurt Krieger has given you a very good kind of summary overview of what they are, how they work. The points that I would add to that is that they are a common tool that is used broadly around the country, a very effective tool. The Nexus study is the step that we need to take to really understand how that tool could be applied in our particular community and to kind of share that concept with the broader community, with the business community, the development community, and understand how it could help this particular crisis. The linkage fee, the TIF resources, all of these become part of a larger toolkit, and there are other tools that we should continue to explore. Certainly, inclusionary zoning is one. We have worked for a number of years in the legislature to override that preemption. There is still work to be done. We hope that the City Council will support that work. And I know you're looking at other resource-based strategies to support affordable housing. We are at a time where we need those all the tools, all hands on deck, and everyone doing their part. So I look forward to seeing the product of your work over the coming months and years, and I hope to be a partner in doing that work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Did you have questions over our panel?
I just want to make one quick comment because this was a very inspiring panel. Ray, you said that everybody has a role to play. And you said specifically we're going to talk to the private sector to see what role they'll play. And I just want to underscore, in the last 3 years, 11,000 new market rate apartments, less than 2% of which were affordable. And when I hear developers say that the city has not been generous enough with their subsidies, I say to them, what is your moral obligation to address this housing crisis? And why is the only route one in which the city has to step up and subsidize the unit? We'll play our fair share. We'll play our role. But we're talking about a moral obligation. And to the comment about the impact on families through this housing crisis, Glenfair Elementary School, Outer East, with a new dynamic principal doing her level best, 50% of the students that she starts the school year with will not be there on the last day of school. And so you want to ask the question of what does it mean not to have stable home for struggling families? 50% of the children will not complete that year. How on earth can we have learning when children don't have a stable home? And the third comment I want to make to Bishop, my friend Bishop Hulp, who said, we would like to have more money. The reason I support this compromise is because $67 million is more than the original amount that was in Leah Greenwood's study. And this was a basis for our discussion. And she identified $55 million and some properties. $67 million is a good compromise when you start at 55. And that's why I support it.
Thank you all. Thanks very much. Is that it for invited testimony,
yes,
Commissioner? So let's turn to the sign-up sheet, please, and bring people up in threes or fours.
Mayor, I'd like to offer my amendment.
Sorry, go ahead. Yes, please, Commissioner Novick. Sorry, I forgot that.
Colleagues, this doesn't directly relate to the TIF set-aside percentage technically, but I think as long as we are talking about committing additional URA resources to affordable housing, we should take a look at Memorial Coliseum. I think that the people of Portland expect us to be progressive. They also expect us to be fiscally responsible. And I think that Memorial Coliseum might present us with an opportunity to be both. We've been told recently that it would cost at a minimum $35 million just to make enough repairs to keep Memorial Coliseum limping along as a venue for the Portland Winterhawks and for high school graduations. I think it would be hard to make the case that it's worth $35 million to keep the venue limping along, even if we had $35 million, which we don't. When I took a tour of Memorial Coliseum a couple of years ago, I was struck by what bad shape the building was in, but also what a great place it seemed for residential development. It's right on transit. It's got a great view of downtown. And I believe that it would have to be possible to work out a deal with some developers where they get to build expensive housing, but we reserve a large percentage of housing for low and middle income people. And I've been told that it would be legally possible to give preference for low and middle income housing at that location to veterans we want to honor, and to the family members of people who were displaced from that area when Memorial Coliseum was built, who, of course, were predominantly African American. So I'm suggesting that we direct PDC and the Housing Bureau to study the possibility of developing that site for residential and setting aside 30% of the housing for people between 0 and 120% of median family income. I recognize that there are people who dearly want to preserve Memorial Coliseum as it is. We heard from two of them, Stuart Emmons and Brian Libby, this morning. But we are in an era of limits. We cannot be all things to all people. So I think this is a suggestion that at least deserves to be studied, and therefore I move this amendment.
Is there a second?
I'll second it, but I just want to express my concern about the timing under which this amendment will be executed. I think we discussed yesterday maybe a 6-month period. I've since talked to the Housing Bureau director and don't believe that doing this in a 6-month period is feasible, that it's probably going to take at least a year to do this. And it's going to take the full involvement also of the Office of Management and Finance. So,
To complete a study of feasibility?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think I specified a time period in the amendment, so whatever we could get it done.
Mayor, can I speak to the amendment?
Anyway, sure.
So I'm with great hesitation, I'm going to oppose the amendment. And and I do so at my peril, because a couple years ago, Commissioner Novick had a proposal that we engage the Citizens Utility Board to be one of the oversight bodies for our utilities. And it was one of the best ideas that's ever been presented to me around our utilities, and I embraced it, and it has been spectacularly successful. But I can't support this amendment for three reasons. Number one, I think we're putting the cart before the horse. And by way of a little history, there have been numerous studies of what to do with the Rose Quarter since I've been on this council. It seems to be the Bermuda Triangle of mayors.
Let's hope not.
Is it we keep... we keep launching these studies to figure out, and if we've learned anything in that process, we've learned that without a master plan, we're never going to tackle the Rose Quarter. And if we keep just sort of saying there's one piece here and one piece there, we're going to miss the forest from the trees. Number two, we have not called the question as a council as to whether Memorial Coliseum is even an opportunity site for housing. So why on earth would we do a feasibility study before we've decided that we're giving up on a landmark historic structure that at least a prior council committed to veterans that we would not disturb? And we've had that fight. And I don't want to study this ahead of having the council decide that we've lost that fight. And number three, I cannot support the concept of using TIF and the limited resources of the Housing Bureau to fund housing at 0 to 120% of median family income. That is not a authorized purpose of TIF, and it is not the mission of the Housing Bureau. And so while I think the spirit of this amendment is laudable, and I appreciate the creativity of my colleague, I urge a no vote because I think it's at the very least out of time, out of sequence. And in any event, until this council has a master plan and takes a decision on the future Memorial Coliseum, I don't think we should be investing scarce resources in assessing development options on a site that at least current policy is we are going to save Memorial Coliseum.
I'd also like to speak in opposition to the amendment. This isn't the forum to discuss Memorial Coliseum. It isn't the forum to spend even more resources looking into it. You commissioned a study as part of the Bermuda Triangle. Responsibility of every mayor, and we should have that as a campaign question, what will you do with Memorial Coliseum and the Rose Quarter? We haven't had a council discussion on that. My reading of that was very similar to the reading on the Portland building. It would cost more to demolish it than it would to fix it up. And there are multiple reasons why we should fix it up, not least that it's got a historic designation. It would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to take that off. So I respectfully request that we bring this question back when we have the discussion on the Memorial Coliseum rather than addressing it today.
We have implicitly addressed a lot of questions today, or we are going to address them in the course of this 45% set-aside, because if you're spending 45% on housing, there's other things that you're not spending money on. And I think that a Memorial Coliseum, there's a danger we will kick the can down the road forever, just as we have with transportation funding. I wasn't here 3 or 4 years ago, but we all received the most recent report that said that at a minimum, it takes $35 million simply to keep Memorial Coliseum limping along. And I do think that it's appropriate to call the question, does that make any sense? If it doesn't, we should start actively exploring other alternatives. And finally, we are here today because we know that there is a housing crisis. And unfortunately, we don't have the tools to address it all at once. But I think that we should be exploring every option to provide for more affordable housing, not just for the poorest people, for middle-income people who are also being squeezed out. And I think that we cannot be all things to all people, and we should at least acknowledge the possibility that housing for low- and middle-income people is more important than keeping a building limping along as a site for the Portland Winterhawks and for high school graduations.
Well, let's go ahead and take a vote. I think I can offer some reassurances. I'm going to not support the motion, but let's go through the process here and take a roll call vote on the amendment.
Novick?
Aye.
Prince?
No.
Fish?
No.
Saltzman?
I just want to point out that this does not involve, the amendment does not involve the committing of urban renewal funds whatsoever. It talks about the urban renewal area, but it doesn't speak about the urban renewal dollars being committed. In fact, there are no urban dollars left in the convention center to be committed to housing. Just wanted to get that clarification, but I do support this amendment and we'll vote aye.
Hales.
Well, I appreciate the creative suggestion, Commissioner Novick. I mean that not as a backhanded compliment. I actually appreciate when people do this and bring forth creative ideas and that we actually debate them in this room and vote on them and that we're not always 5-0 or 0-5. But I'm going to oppose this amendment for several reasons. One, I've actually, in my capacity as both commissioner in charge of the Office of Management and Finance, which owns a bunch of the property there, and in my role as the council connection to PDC, I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of people about the future of Memorial Coliseum. Haven't sailed into the Bermuda Triangle, but have looked in from various corners several times with various parties. And I've heard a lot of creative ideas for Memorial Coliseum over the last 2 years and 10 months. None of them are actionable, which is why I've left the money in the urban renewal budget, but not spent any of it, because I agree with your point of view that spending a bunch of urban renewal money to just keep this building limping along is not a success. So I'm still looking for that viable idea. I think we still might hear that idea soon, because there are some smart, creative people in the community working on other scenarios than just maintenance or demolition. Secondly, it would cost, by what I've seen, about $11 million to tear the building down. And so actually, unfortunately, Commissioner Fritz, it would cost less to tear it down than it would to fix it up. But neither scenario is my first choice. So again, I'm looking for the better option, and I think we still might find it and not simply be lost in that triangle. But to the $11 million, we own a lot of land. We, the city, own a lot of land. In fact, we own several parcels at Memorial Coliseum, one of which is vacant. And I'd rather see us build housing on those parcels that don't require an $11 million demolition, all other things being equal. So you're right to keep the pressure on for us to not foolishly spend money on an unremarkable outcome with Memorial Coliseum, but I think we can focus our housing agenda better in other places, at least for now. No. Okay. Any other amendments? So let's now take public testimony. How many people do we have signed up, Carla?
We have 18.
Okay. That's not an unmanageable number. Thank you all for exercising some restraint for not everyone testifying. Spokespeople are great. So let's call them, please.
The first three, or four, please come on up, are John Mulvey, Terry Parker, Harriet Cook, and Frida Christopher. And they'll be followed by Arlene Kimura, Jackie Putnam, Alexandra Anderson, and Steve Massanetti.
John, I think you're on first.
Thank you. Mayor Hales and members of the council, thank you for the chance to talk to you this afternoon in support of raising the TIF set aside for affordable housing. My name is John Mulvey. I'm a former member of the Lentz Town Center Urban Renewal Advisory Committee, and I'm a current member of the East Portland Action Plan Housing Subcommittee. I want to thank you for your leadership on raising the TIF. As has been said before, we need to do more on housing in this city, but this is a big step, and it will make a big difference. I had quite a bit of very complimentary language when I realized I'd be cut down to 2 minutes. Most of that made it to the cutting room floor, so I'll just skip to my concerns, if that's okay. This is the five-year review of the set-aside policy, as you know, and the fundamental question that we all should be asking is, how do we ensure that the TIF dollars we're spending translate into safe and affordable homes for low-income Portlanders? And there are certain aspects of that conversation that I felt like got a little bit of short shrift during this discussion and this process. I wish that you had delved more into the way the Portland Development Commission's obscure and ad hoc processes make it less of a community partner and more of an ongoing obstacle for the groups working to house low-income Portlanders. I also wish that you had revisited your decision to do away with the citizen advisory committees, which provided one of the few meaningful tools to bring transparency and accountability to the agency. Housing set-aside reports are inconsistent from year to year, only including total dollars spent, not the number of units, not the income levels, and not how much money went to which projects, and I hope that that's corrected going forward. On the occasions when the PDC solicits public input, they consult with only a fairly narrow group of people. The project selection committees are filled with homeowners, property owners, known opponents of affordable housing. Renters, housing advocates, and communities of color are rarely at the table for these conversations. So I'll finish there, but I just want to mention that, you know, low-income Portlanders, I've heard the word burden used as far as neighborhoods being burdened with affordable housing, et cetera. And I just want to push back about that. I mean, these are people who are the future riches of our city, in the phrase of CES Wood. And so I hope we really treat them with that kind of value and respect. I was happy to hear Dyke Dame refer to his youth in subsidized housing. So let's remember that the future Dyke Dames and future people who will have that level of impact on our community could be living in substandard housing right now in East Portland. So let's always keep that in mind and, again, do more. Thank you.
Thank you. Frida, would you like me next?
Yes, I'll be next. First, I'd like to thank you for allowing the opportunity to testify today. My name is Frida Christopher. I'm a member of the David Douglas School Board. I've been on that board for 24 years. I'm also co-chair of the EPAP Housing Subcommittee, as well as having served on the Gateway URAC through its life. So I have knowledge of education, housing, and how URAs are run. But today, I am speaking strictly for David Douglas School District and our school board. Superintendent Grotting extended his regrets. He was tied up today, so I was elected to come. And as we said in our October 19th letter, our district is not taking a stand for or against the TIF, increasing the TIF set aside. But since approximately 50% of Lentz URA, 90% of Gateway's URA, as well as two MPIs are within our district boundaries, we felt it important to share certain information with you today, as in your final decision-making, but also in the future, because having worked with the URAC, I know the allocations can change. David Douglas is 12 square miles in East Portland. We have 9 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, 1 high school, and 1 alternative school. Our high school is the largest in the state with over 3,000 students. Our current enrollment is just over 10,700 students with 75 languages spoken in our schools and communities. Our schools are at and over capacity. Our demographics has changed dramatically since 96. Free and reduced lunch went from 39% to 82%. We currently have 5 schools in the new federal program that gives free lunch for everyone, because in those catchment areas, 62.5% of the residents qualified for food stamps. Our EL population has grown from 6% to 20%. It has peaked as high as 25%. And during the period of 96 to 2014, the average growth in our district was 2.6% per year, but the average growth in the free and reduced lunch went up 11.5%. We have a concentration of our ELL and low-income students, which causes a need, and that causes the district to have to provide many extra services. We're currently doing our facility plan, and are working in collaboration with planning and sustainability as well as parks, because of the 12 square miles, we lack room to build schools. But our current projections say we need 2 new elementary schools within the next 10 years, and that isn't to reduce capacity, that's just to handle the new students. In a recent bond workshop, looking at all the needs over the next 10 years, we would have to go for a $120 million bond. That doesn't seem a lot with PPS at $500 million, but for Douglas, we're lucky to pass a $49 million bond just 3 years ago. With the URAs, we happen to have one of the lowest tax assessed values per pupil in the state, and the frozen amount of the URA, that growth, is taking off our ability to lower our bond costs. There's $400 million in assessed values in the URAs. But today I want to just stress that we acknowledge this importance of stable housing for our students and the effect it has on their educational success. The service we provide to those students in the district are very important, and we feel it's important for the City Council to consider the impact of any decision they make today as it has on the schools that provide those services to those students in the URA. They mentioned extending lunch. I should tell you, as the long-term member, senior member at David Douglas School Board, and the most knowledgeable on URAs, and a big supporter of starting the Gateway URA and extending the lunch, that at this time, because of bonding and our needs in the future, we probably would come out against any extension of any URA.
Thank you. Thanks very much. We appreciate your partnership. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name's Harriet Cook. And I first want to express my gratitude for all of the work of the commissioners and all the speakers before me who have spent so much time and energy on this important issue. At the risk of sounding like a lunatic, I'm here to introduce an idea that of an alternative financing potential, which is complementary local currencies at the local government level. Complementary currencies are anything outside of our usual financing system. There are books that describe how they work currently, historically, the problems with them, and their potentials. I'm not going to go into details. They basically connect underutilized resources with unmet needs. Naomi Klein's recent book, This Changes Everything, really brought light to the problems of our capitalistic system. And yet we don't hear too many alternatives to that. We're continually working within the system, within the limitations of the system. Her book also sheds light on the problem of economic growth. And yet, how many of our ideas require economic growth? To be limited by money, if there are people looking for work, is an arbitrary and unnecessary limitation. Complementary currencies at the local government level is a long-term idea. It will in no way diminish the importance of the revenue-generating actions within the current currency system. And I look forward to talking with all of you as the future permits more about these ideas and how to integrate them to meet the goals of the health of the people and our region. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Very welcome. There you go. Yes.
Terry Parker. Fourth generation Portlander, I'm speaking as an individual today. Policy 5.18 in Portland's recommended draft comprehensive plan addresses aging in place. It reads, encourage a range of housing options and supportive environments to enable older adults to remain in their communities as their needs change. To many older adults, retirees, and senior citizens, aging in place means continuing to live in their owner-occupied single-family homes. While the city offers tax breaks to developers for including affordable housing and multi-unit developments, older adults, now retired and living on fixed or semi-fixed incomes, who have a lifetime investment in their homes, are being taxed out. Property taxes on even a modest home in Portland includes an extra $400 to $500 with the item line Urban Renewal-Portland. Moreover, this will be the third year in a row where there will be no increase in Social Security benefits. If the minimum wage is increased to $15 an hour, prices on food and other necessities will likely increase. Seniors on fixed incomes who will see their cost of living rise with no corresponding increase in income have been completely left out of the conversation. Where is the dialogue and the mitigation for the financial impacts on these retirees? It seems only equitable that if 45 or 50% of urban renewal funding is to be dedicated to affordable housing, seniors on fixed or semi-fixed incomes living in their own homes should have a similar percentage reduction from the urban renewal line on their property tax bills. It is simply unjust to expect low-income seniors to subsidize affordable housing for other people. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay.
The next four are Arlene Kimura, Jackie Putnam and Alexandra Anderson, and Steve Messinetti. And they will be followed by John Rogers, Lisa and Francia Velasquez, and Annie Rose Shapiro.
Okay, Arlene, I think you're first, and your microphone's already on. So if you're ready to,
ready to go. My name is Arlene Kimura. Thank you very much, Council members and Mayor Hills, for this opportunity. I do want to thank Mayor Hills and the Council for their work on the revised proposal, specifically for Gateway, because that's where I have my neighborhood. And I appreciate the effort that went with it. I'm also, however, very concerned that this whole process has been, I believe, somewhat knee-jerk, definitely not holistic, because you cannot have just housing. You have to have economic development. You have to have transportation. And I don't feel it was inclusive. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Jackie Putnam. I'm one of the former co-chairs of the Gateway Urban Renewal Committee. I serve on the Hazelwood Neighborhood Association Board and an active member of the East Portland, I should say a participating member of the East Portland Action Plan. I am not in favor of increasing the set-aside in the Gateway area. It is a very small area. It has more than its share of affordable housing. The Gateway URA has contributed many times to, in fact, multiple times to the same property for establishing and working nonprofit housing. We need to save what diggable land we have in Gateway for tax-generating businesses. There's also discussion about the building of at the park site. It should happen, and it should be entirely tax-generating. We don't want another nonprofit occupying the ground floor of what should be a tax-generating establishment. What is the point in delaying the work that's been set or been happening, searching for someone to build? Before we know it, the Gateway URA will be sunsetted, and the acre at the park will be vacant with tent dwellers reminiscent of the North Park blocks. Please consider retaining the 30% in Gateway and rehabilitating houses with that money that exist already without new construction. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Alex Anderson de Beaulieu. You may remember me from such hearings as raising the minimum wage for city workers alongside 15 Now, the Climate Action Plan, speaking as a local scientist, and now today on affordable housing. Under the watchful eye of this elected council, gentrification, discrimination, displacement has occurred unnecessarily and without cause. It seems now that you're aware of this, but it's not the first time. Without the support and protection of this city's elected officials, we deserve representation that sees this coming and acts ahead of the crisis. What we've heard is $30 million to help. That's 18% of what 33,000 estimated displaced people have spent of their own money on moving and transportation expenses. We're looking at $165 million of what our people have spent. What this council has suggested is that their hands are tied and that you have limited power. It's a good thing we have plenty of power. Rent control must find its place within these halls. Councilors, I ask for a volunteer, and this is the offer. I've secured an affordable housing unit to occupy for a term of 3 days. Amenities include a locking door, heat, running hot and cold water, and 100 square feet of ample living space. We will provide the address along with security codes for the bathrooms and laundry facilities. Mr. Novick, would you care to make use of the key for a few days? Mr. Mayor, would you take residence here? Any volunteers?
Thanks for the challenge. We'll see who takes you up on it later.
I actually lived in a place like that when I first moved to this country for quite some time.
Okay. Well, I don't hear any volunteers. So by decree of the people's right to their city, Remember this. You are hereby resigning yourself to replacement in the next elections. Thank you for your service. This is your notice.
Good afternoon. There's a switch on the button on the base of that there, Steve. Thank you.
I'm Steve Messinetti, CEO of Habitat for Humanity, and on behalf of Habitat and the families we serve, I thank you for your the co-sponsors, especially Quick Due Diligence and your staff's work on this issue and bringing it quickly through. Habitat encourages your support of the, increasing the TIF set aside for affordable housing. With this additional subsidy, owning a home can be made possible for hundreds more low-income families and families of color. At a time when finding an affordable rental seems impossible for so many of our low-income working families, it's necessary to remind everyone in this room that homeownership is possible for a family making as little as $25,000 a year, and Habitat is making this happen in neighborhoods all over our city. Who has access to buying property? Our answer to this single question is the deciding factor of whether or not we get a future Portland that is equitable for low-income families and people of color. This is because owning property has always been and will continue to be the single most powerful element to build social and financial equity. Ownership simultaneously and immediately builds equity while preventing displacement long term. I would also like to recommend, as Commissioner Fish did, that a key focus of these funds be on the development of new affordable housing units that are sized for families with children. A significant part of this housing crisis is that all of the units being added in this building boom are high-end units and that are small. The creation of new family-sized affordable housing is critical. That said, I believe an unintended consequence of the creation of the Portland Housing Bureau years ago was the elimination of the city's homeownership development program. Prior to the creation of PHB, the city had a successful PDC program whereby it issued TIF funds annually to nonprofits to develop affordable homeownership units for families earning 30 to 60% MFI. Just Habitat alone built more than 50 of these units in the interstate, Lentz, and Gateway areas for families under 60% MFI. Over 80% of them were households of color. But this program abruptly stopped when PHB was created, and no other homeownership units have been created with TIF funds since. Homeownership subsidy for new units also frees up rental resources as households move out of affordable and subsidized housing. So I thank you again for your support and encourage your support of this TIF set-aside as well as some of the other items I suggested. Yeah,
thank you. We appreciate what Habitat does.
Mr. Messinetti, has the council made particular choices that have done away with that program, or why has it gone away?
I'm not sure. I believe it was just the transition of the structure of PDC going over to the Portland Housing Bureau and not having a structure to allocate the development of housing. And those funds, therefore, have been used for the down payment assistance programs to help a family buy an existing house, but not for the development of additional housing.
I know that several of us have volunteered with Habitat Building, so I appreciate you bringing it to our attention, and I'd like some more information on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised it because there are a couple of side effect issues of having the two agencies. This is one.
Yep.
And another is that we're not as good as we used to be at doing mixed use projects because PDC isn't in the housing business and housing isn't really in the commercial development business. And so who makes sure that we build great mixed use buildings that support neighborhood life? Though there are some costs to the structure that we have now in terms of effectiveness. And I appreciate you raising that. Thank you. Thank you all. Okay.
Next four are John Rogers, Lisa and Francia Velasquez, and Annie Rose Shapiro. And they will be followed by Blaine Valdez, Zoe Taylor, Linda Robinson, and David Kingham.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, John.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is John Rogers. I'm a member of Salt and Light Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland and a leader in the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good, MACG, and I'd ask MACG leaders to stand this time.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify on the proposed amendment to the TIF set aside for affordable housing. We all know that today, the citizens of Portland are experiencing an unparalleled housing crisis. that threatens the very heart and future of our city. MACG and its predecessor, the Portland Organizing Project, has been training and organizing citizen leaders and taking action on our neighborhoods for 30 years. We have trained over 2,000 new leaders, preparing them to participate in the decision-making process in the public arena and to give them an opportunity to claim their voice and power and to bring positive change about in neighborhoods. In reporting our testimony and presence in numbers at several recent public hearings, MACG has been identified as faith-based housing advocates. While many of our 25 institutions, which represent approximately 27,000 members, are faith-based, MACG is more than that. It's a broad-based organization, and our member institutions include labor unions, healthcare organizations, and community nonprofits located throughout metropolitan Portland. We've been called housing advocates, but MACG is more than that. For many years, MACG has been organizing to create more equitable communities for all the citizens of Portland. We've organized around community health and safety, negotiating with the City of Portland $200,000 in funding and enforcement mechanisms to restore neighborhoods by contaminating properties used in drug use production. We've worked with unions to win 800 prevailing wage jobs in the South Waterfront development. We've secured much needed housing for survivors of domestic violence. And we've worked to secure for all Oregonians access to affordable health care. Worked with contractors, unions, and community-based organizations to bring about energy-efficient improvements to Portland, and in particular, the Cully neighborhood in Northeast Portland. But all of these actions spring from the same source, listening to our people's stories and acting. Over time, the issues and the stories may change, but our practice remains the same. We listen to the stories and the pressures that our members are experiencing, and then we organize to take action to relieve those pressures. Over the last 3 months, we have heard hundreds of housing crisis stories from our members who live in every part of the city. That's why we're here today, to support this increase in the TIF set aside as the first step in addressing the housing crisis that threatens an ever increasing number of people who are facing housing insecurity. As our member partners at OHSU remind us, one of the major determinant social factors in family health and well-being is stable housing. We commend the City Council, the Housing Bureau, and PDC for doing the hard work of negotiating this ordinance, weighing a variety of needs while keeping the current crisis in the forefront. We're mindful that these are public dollars that are being spent. And so we need more accountability and transparency going forward. We want to spend our public dollars wisely, yet creatively, and with some urgency. The crisis is real, immediate, and daunting. But with every crisis, there is a kernel of opportunity. Now is the time for bold action and innovative thinking. We look forward to working with you, our community partners, and private developers. Together, we can find permanent funding for housing, new tools to ensure that housing remains affordable and permanent, and more imaginative ways to build it. The TIF increase is a good first step to address the crisis. Now let's make this an opportunity to envision new housing possibilities, not only for ourselves, but for our children and our grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Buenas tardes. Señor Alcalde Hales y señores comisionados.
Mayor Hales and commissioners.
Mi nombre es Francia Velázquez y hoy me siento muy triste.
My name is Francia Velázquez and today I feel very sad.
Me siento triste porque no tengo domicilio permanente. Me siento triste porque me quitaron mi hogar y es como si me quitaran la vida.
I'm sad because I have no permanent address to tell you. I am sad because it feels like my life was taken away from me, along with my home.
Hace 12 años llegué a North Portland con la esperanza de encontrar un nuevo hogar, una estabilidad para mis hijos. Tengo a mi esposo y a mis tres hijos de 17, 12 y 11 años de edad.
I arrived in North Portland 12 years ago with the hope of finding a new home, a stability for my family. I have a husband and three children, age 17, 12, and 11 years old.
Hicimos una vida ahí. Mis hijos nacieron y crecieron ahí. Asisten a la escuela en el vecindario de Piedmont, donde vivíamos.
We made a life here. My children were born here. They've grown up here. They attend schools in the Piedmont neighborhood, where we lived.
Este año, vendieron los apartamentos sin avisarnos. Y llegaron a nuestro hogar y nos dijeron que ya no podíamos vivir ahí.
This year, our apartment building was sold without warning. They came to our home and told us that we could no longer live here.
No pensaron si nos afectaría, si teníamos un lugar para nuestros hijos. No pensaron en el efecto emocional y físico que nos causarían. No nos ofrecieron otro lugar para rentar, ni el tiempo para buscar otro departamento.
They didn't think about how this would affect us, whether we had a place to go. They didn't think of the emotional and physical damage that this would cause to my family. They didn't offer us another place to rent or enough time to find a place.
Simplemente nos desalojaron. Nos pareció injusto.
They just evicted us. It felt so unfair.
En la búsqueda nos encontramos personas malas que nos bajaron nuestra moral con sus comentarios negativos y se podría decir que racistas. Fue un estrés terrible. Mis hijos no disfrutaron sus vacaciones de verano. Hasta estuvo uno de mis hijos en el hospital a causa del estrés que le provocó.
During our housing search, we met bad people who hurt our morale with negative racist comments. The stress was terrible. My children couldn't enjoy their summer vacation. The effects of stress caused one child to be hospitalized.
Anduvimos cada día en la búsqueda hasta altas horas de la noche, sin descanso y sin encontrar un lugar donde vivir. Pasamos noches sin dormir de pensar qué íbamos a hacer, el cual iba a ser nuestro futuro.
We spent all day, every day, searching without resting and without finding a place to live. We spent sleepless nights thinking, what are we going to do? What will our future be like?
Cuando llamamos a la empresa que compró para que nos dieran solo 2 días más, se negaron. Nos dijeron que si no nos salíamos, llegaría el sheriff a sacarnos de ahí.
We called the company that bought the apartment building to ask them to just give us 2 more days. They said no. They said that if we didn't move out, the sheriff would come to force us out.
No nos quedó alternativa y todos nuestros muebles los tiramos. Vivimos del sueldo de mi esposo y no tenemos ahorros que nos permitieran rentar una bodega para guardar lo que por 12 años juntamos con sacrificio.
We had no alternative. We gave away all of our furniture. We can survive on my husband's income, but we weren't able to save enough to store the furniture that it took us 12 years of sacrifice to purchase.
Perdimos todo.
We lost everything.
Tenemos suerte de tener familiares cerca. Estamos viviendo con ellos. Por el momento, esto les permite a mis hijos seguir en las mismas escuelas. Por ahora, en las escuelas que ellos se han acoplado.
We are lucky to have family nearby, so we moved in with them. This allows my children to continue in the same schools for now, where they are very attached. This is critical to their education and well-being.
Pero somos 11 en una casa de 3 recámaras. Estamos haciéndonos a todos nos causa estrés. Tengo miedo porque a todos nos podrían desalojar de esa casa por romper las reglas con tantas personas.
But it is 11 of us in a 3-bedroom house. It is crowded and stressful for everyone. It's scary because we could all be evicted from that house for breaking the rules with so many people there.
Espero encontrar una estabilidad para mis hijos, un lugar que podamos llamar casa.
I hope to find stability for my children, a place they can call home again.
Por favor, queremos viviendas con precios justos y accesibles para vivir. Gracias.
Please, we need more accessible fair pricing housing. Thank you.
Y que Dios los bendiga a todos.
And God bless you all.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And good luck. We'll, hopefully there are quite a few people in the room that would like to help. I think you see five of them right here. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there an Annie Rose Shapiro? Okay, then we'll go to the next four. Are Blaine Valdez, Zoe Taylor, Linda Robinson, and David Kingham.
Come on up, please.
And they'll be followed by the last two. I show Peggy on Madison and Diane Lynn.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh, like to be am I first? Going first? Your mic's on, so you might as well.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hills, Commissioners. My name is Bianeth Valdez, representing Welcome Home and the Tireless, Fearless Advocates of Portland. These voices were represented to you earlier this afternoon when we presented with 300 postcards of the many people who need a call and need of action for more affordable housing in Portland. I would like to take the time to read some right now, and I encourage you to read some as well in your free time. These are really heartfelt stories and personal stories of many people in the community who want more livable and affordable homes. And I encourage you to read them and let this be just the first action in getting more affordable housing within Portland. This is not just our first step, but we have a long way to go. Okay, one reads, I have worked with families and individuals who are homeless for the past 20 years and have seen the increase due to the lack of affordable housing. I support an increase in funding for affordable housing using a larger proportion of the tax increment financing. Please remember us, the low-income people of Portland. I've lived here 72 years. Housing is a human right, and it is a mark of our civic decency to increase the access to safe, clean, and affordable housing. It is a matter of safety for all and an opportunity to say who we are as a community. Please consider this. Our city needs to work for people of all income levels. The best time to address this was 20 years ago. The next best time is now. Home is where the heart is. Don't lose the heart of Portland. Thank you for your time, and thank you for supporting this policy.
Thank you. Linda, please.
Next. Okay, I'm Linda Robinson. I live in the Hazelwood neighborhood, which includes the Gateway Urban Renewal Area. I wanted to start by saying that I was disappointed, and there didn't seem to be much effort made to reach out to the people who've been involved in the Gateway Urban Renewal for 15 years or more. I'm not sure there was much effort to contact even any of the people who were on that Citizen Advisory Committee, and I'm still disappointed that they disbanded it. This would have been a great opportunity to discuss what some of the trade-offs might be. You know, if you increase the spending that affordable housing set aside, what are we giving up? Give us some say in which part of the budget might, you know, go away. So I'm still thinking that even if they weren't monthly meetings, if we had some sort of way to reach people. Also, I just wanted to say that you know, the East Portland Action Plan and a lot of us who live out in East Portland, we are trying to prevent displacement. We haven't gentrified yet. We're trying to put things in place, put affordable housing permanently in place so that when we do, when the prices do start going up in Gateway, we retain the affordable housing that we have, so we're not against affordable housing. But when you look at Gateway and East Portland, very few households there make more than the median family income. I mean, almost all of the housing that exists in East Portland is affordable housing just by the nature of the fact that it's cheaper there, which is why people are moving there. So we have a lot of affordable housing. What we need is to put money, instead of building more affordable housing, put money into rehabilitating and converting some of the privately owned properties so that they stay affordable housing when and if the other rents begin to rise. So if you're going to put more money into affordable housing in Gateway, I'd prefer to see it go into that way, to rehabilitate, make them better, some of the older housing that we have, and keep it so that it stays affordable housing in the future. And one other pet concern of mine is that the work session that I saw PDC said that they would put affordable housing on the property adjacent to the new Gateway Park, which will be built starting in March or April. That's not consistent with a master plan that many of us spent a long time developing. There are other PDC-owned properties in Gateway. This is not the place for affordable housing. We need to put what was planned there so that we can generate more TIF, so that we have more TIF that you can then put into affordable housing. We don't have much of anything that generates TIF, and that project was designed to generate TIF and should stay that way.
Linda, let me just offer a little bit of reassurance here from my perspective, and that is what each district is contributing to this effort varies widely, obviously, from district to district. The proposal is that there'd be an additional $2 million
commitment. We don't have a lot in our fund
right.
to start
I understand that. So it's sort of from each according to their ability. But also how we address the affordable housing need in each district doesn't have to be the same.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be a generic project. In fact, I guarantee it won't be.
Which is why I wanted to, you know, emphasize that what our need is and Gateway is.
And we've heard much the same concern from Lentz, that they have a specific action plan, they have certain things that they want to see. And so our commitment here is that, yes, we're going to raise the total amount of commitment to affordable housing, but how we do it in each district really needs to be involving people from that district, as you've mentioned. That's critical and won't be the same because of the market conditions are wildly different in different parts of the city. The Pearl District and Gateway are just a little bit of a different situation in terms of market.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's get real about that and have a strategy that makes sense in each case.
And then, and it could very much be part of our prevention of displacement goal.
Good point.
And can I just ask you a question? Because I have a recollection we were involved in doing that master plan for the Gateway Park, and there was a park, a plaza, and then there was a building, and that building was originally conceived of as being office space. And
originally, but then it was changed that it would be housing because they wanted to have eyes on the park in the evenings and weekends. Okay. And so, but it was talked about being primarily market rate housing, which incidentally, and Gateway is pretty much affordable at this point, but could go up with the market with maybe some affordable units in it.
But what happened to the concept of mixed use, ground floor commercial?
It's supposed to be ground floor commercial, but the the proposals that came in when they put an RFP out were all for nonprofit use of that space, and what we really wanted was a restaurant that would look out onto the park. We wanted businesses commercial in that.
Well, I thought, yeah. I mean, I'm a little out of date on this, but I thought we were trying to activate the plaza and the ground floor, both for some commercial vitality on that commercial strip, but also to provide eyes and ears.
We are. That's why neither of those proposals was accepted.
Right. Exactly. That's why they went through two rounds because all of the proposals that came in were nonprofit use of the ground floor level.
So we're not there yet.
Yeah.
And I've been working with Commissioner Saltzman and his staff and discussions with Parks as well to maybe pull back on the current request for more proposals on that site. One of my thoughts is let's wait until we've built the park and people will see how spectacular it is, and then potentially we can get some market rate or even government offices or something there. So I really appreciate you raising this point, that point, because on that particular site, yes, there's big dreams, and it needs to be a catalytic.
It's really the focal point of the whole Halsey-Weidler corridor.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So we'll keep working with you and get to a good result. Thank you. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Zoe Taylor. I moved to Portland 4 years ago because I wanted to live in a progressive city and also one that has no snow.
We'll try to make good on both.
Okay. I'm the face of white privilege. I own a luxury condo in downtown Portland. I have a pension and Social Security. I have Medicare and health insurance. But guess what? It's not just about me. Shelter is a human right. I'm grateful for all I have, but what about the rest of the community? I was a struggling single parent in the 70s, but I had the baseline of privilege. And despite discrimination in housing and employment, that baseline allowed me to succeed. I raised my son to serve his community, and thus I am the mother of a veteran Portland police officer. I give back, I volunteer at two shelters, I donate to various local NGOs, I don't just wait for the government to act, but what I do as an individual is just not enough. You and the council must ask yourselves, what kind of world do we want to live in? What kind of city? You must ask, what about the other 99%? What about the workers who serve us?